Welcome to FemTech at Work, the podcast where we explore the intersection of technology, health, and women's empowerment in the workplace, hosted by me, Maaike Steinebach. This show will dive into the innovative solutions transforming women's health and well-being in the workplace. Join us as we chat with FemTech founders, industry leaders, and change makers who are pioneering advancements in FemTech and women's health. We discuss everything: menstrual health, reproductive rights, menopause, but also the challenges women face in the workplace and how innovation can overcome them. Whether you're a seasoned professional or just starting your FemTech journey, FemTech at Work is here to inspire and inform you about the future of health and wellness for women everywhere. Tune in and be part of the conversation. And welcome to this episode of the podcast FemTech at Work with today a very special guest, Saskia Wardani, who is the founder of OV Health. Hi, Saskia. Thanks for joining.
Hi. Thank you for having me here. It's a pleasure.
I'm so excited. What a lot of people don't know is how much I actually enjoy this podcast because I get to talk to these amazing people like you and get so inspired by your stories. And you're actually super special because you are really a serial entrepreneur. You've been already doing many, many things before you started OV Health. Can you share a little bit about your background?
Of course. So I probably jumped into female health in a non-conventional way. I started my career in finance first. So yeah. I even had a master in applied finance because I always thought I was going to stay in like investment banking. But then I realized that what excites me is more into the consumer area. Then I switched over to startup. So I have been working in a tech startup for, I think, 8 years, mainly focused on building this and expanding this tech startup in Southeast Asia. So my market of expertise is in Malaysia, Singapore, and Indonesia. And then only after I switch over back to banking, that's when I realized like how important it is for female health to actually be supported and how big the market is. As for context, my family's background in science.
Okay.
We run labs in Indonesia. So we have food labs. Majority of the bigger F&B or like food FMCG yeah. company in Indonesia are like handled by the family because of like the biotech side. From there, we kind of like expanding into the consumer, like who's actually consuming all of this product and like who actually making the decisions, because then we have to kind of fit the science part into that. And so my family started looking into other areas, who can we help and who actually be, you know, the product that eventually like our partners will be releasing. And that's also where I started jumping into the nonprofit organizations that my family run. It's called Tempe Movement. So we try to solve nutrition for toddlers to prevent stunting, which
yes.
is a huge thing
huge
in Indonesia.
Huge problem in Indonesia. Yeah, I was so surprised to learn about that. I never heard about the word, but it seems to be a huge problem.
Yeah, it is. And it's so kind of like fascinating because if people know Indonesia, they only see the best part, right? Like Bali, people coming from Jakarta, Surabaya, all the luxury stuff. And we have a lot of food. But then why do we have this kind of problem? Then going deep into kind of like the cause and the whole story, then we realize it goes back into one, right? And it is the woman. It's the mother. It's the future mothers who are like making the decision. And so that was kind of like the first path for me to jump into women's health. And it was like 10 years ago or even more, I think, going into like stunting and then nutrition for the woman. And then it progressing into what we call 1,000 days of the babies and the toddlers. So that I started exploring in pregnancy area and I founded pregnancy education platform. We call it One Mom. And then we serve more than 2 million women across Indonesia per month.
Wow.
We provide like education. Yeah, we provide education, we provide access for them to get like a validated knowledge from professionals. So we work with OBGYN, we work with nutritionists, we work with basically everybody, kind of make it a compact educational base for everyone. And I think with that, my proudest moment was to actually able to kind of spread into the access that we have in Jakarta to every other island like Jayapura or like Sulawesi and all that. That's like very hard to do. And that is the start of building OV Health, which the way I see it, we still need something that is not only educational, but it's a direct and very distinctive process on, okay, then what do we have to do?
Very interesting. Maybe could you just explain in 1 minute what stunting is to the people that haven't heard about it before?
Stunting is a severe malnutrition that happens typically when babies or like toddlers experience before they turn 3 years. And the difference between the normal malnutrition is that because this is happening during the golden period of growth, it affects them until basically the end of their life.
Basically, they remain small, right? So they remain underdeveloped and smaller than normal children.
Yes, and not only in terms of their height or in terms of their weight, but also in terms of their organ, specifically brain.
Ah, okay. Basically, this could be avoided if the mothers would eat and take care of themselves better during their pregnancy, like doing exercise, healthy eating.
Yes, correct. Because this 1,000 days, which typically around 3 years, right? It actually starts on the day one of conception. So, I mean, imagine like pregnancy and conception is already 9 months. That's literally already 1/3 of the whole, like 1,000 days.
Because I think it also comes back to OV Health, right? But why is it in Indonesia that women do not necessarily take care of themselves? Maybe they take care of themselves in Singapore or other countries.
I think the way we look at it, there are multiple problems that come across. That, for example, in terms of access, even like Indonesians don't really understand, or like maybe they forgot, we are comprised of like 17,000 islands with thousands of culture. Each and every island has different nutrition, different plants, including local culture. So providing them with a very similar or uniform ideas or informations actually prevent this woman to get the right educations, also in the right knowledge on how to take care of their body. So for example, one of superfood that Indonesia has is tempeh. And majority of the time, tempeh is made with soy. But soy doesn't grow in every part of the country. Maybe like on the east side of Indonesia, they have some other source of protein. But for example, like we tell them, oh, this is what you have to eat. Maybe they cannot. And then in the end, like they just don't eat it because they don't have it. If we just look at like the bigger picture, we could say like a lot of people that are becoming like denied to the excess of whatever they need. And that becoming a problem, there's like growing a little bit more. Hence, even starting from a baby, we already have stunting problem.
Yeah, amazing the work that your family is doing and the work that you did on your first company, because you also successfully exited that company. So congratulations on that. But coming back to the way the society positions the mothers, and correct me if I'm wrong, but what I understand also is that firstly, a lot of women basically expect once they get married that they are pregnant immediately, because that's what people do, right? You marry, you have a baby, yes. You get pregnant. And then when you become pregnant, it is almost like a bit of a treasure. So like I'm from Amsterdam, but it's really when you're pregnant, you need to stay active until even the day that you're supposed to give birth. And people go to the gym, they do all the household, they take care of the other kids. But I understand in Indonesia, that may be a little bit different, right? Can you talk a little bit about how that culturally affects what you have to do now with Ovi?
I think we're dealing with two biggest political stigma or taboo thing about women and their fertility and reproductive health. When it comes to fertility, the pressure is on the woman. It is still very common for a lot of couples in Indonesia that if there's anything problem with them as a couple in terms of like conceiving, it's the woman's fault. There's a limited knowledge about it, that it takes two hands to clap because the women are the one carrying the whole responsibility is there. Second is how a lot of societies still think a pregnant woman are sick women. They are not able or not even given the trust of responsibility just like a normal woman. Because their body is changing, then they also have to be treated fully as like a sick person. And we do see the possibility of these beliefs come from like an old knowledge. Women's health in general is not something that we talk about or we learn about or even like research. So the kind of knowledge that being passed down from our grandma, our mother, maybe even like my parents don't know anything about it. It's more like a belief. It's more like a myth. With OV Health, we look at a woman's health in the bigger perspective. the focus is still fertility and reproductive health, but fertility and reproductive health itself affected by a lot of other factors. For example, I think there's one research that says during like trimester one, whatever the woman are experiencing is also depends on the quality of sperm, for example, right? That's one. And in that case, like we look at how like this affects the fertility and reproductive health of a woman and trying to kind of educate in that way. And the same with how like we're expanding into other factors as well. Longevity, for us women, is also different than for men, right? Like longevity starts from our ovaries, which only women has. Like how do we actually preserve or like even tackle the issue of fertility and reproductive health with kind of like a visions of going into longevity and stuff like that. The visions that we have first in the market that we are currently working on, which is Indonesia, we try to tackle a lot of like this stigma and taboos that has deeply rooted into the society and how we actually changing the narrative and say, look, when we talk about women's fertility and reproductive health, we are not talking about sex, for example. We're talking about women's health, like how we can function as a fully woman while also understanding and acknowledging that there might be changes within our body that's related to our fertility.
Yes, amazing. Tell me, what does OV do exactly?
We're an AI-powered platform that acts as a virtual nurse. So we bridge our users, our patients, and the clinic through data insight that help shorten the time for diagnosis for clinics and at the same time managing the patient care. On the user side, they can use our app and our technology as basically like a personalized solutions, like coaching, basically depending on what the goals. We provide the whole ecosystem starting from the services, including everything else that they need. But then at the same time, on the clinic side, we shorten the time it takes on the operation. That helps to shorten the time for diagnosis.
Both parties have access to the app. Basically, the woman completes all the information, but it is connected also to the patient record at the clinic.
Yes, but it still complies with the privacy. So,
of course.
Yes. And it's based on a trigger that's coming from the user. So, for example, if I'm already a patient on Clinic A, for a very small basic things that is urgent, Clinic A would get a notification on my condition, just on the very simple one. Because what we want to happen is that Clinic A can immediately take action to help the patient. But then on the broader informations, me, for example, like as a patient, I have to actually trigger to my app this information that I want to send to the clinic so they can help me better.
Amazing. And how is it going? Because you recently started, right? How has been the uptake and how are you reaching women? Because I guess that must be hard to create awareness, right?
Yeah, we still focus on Indonesian women as a patient. We do work with clinics in 5 countries. We have clinics in Indonesia, Singapore, Malaysia, Thailand, and South Korea. So the clinics overseas are also managing their Indonesian patients to us. Currently, we are working with 120 clinics in total within these 5 countries. At the moment, majority of our user comes from their patient. So the clinic suggests their patients to use us. While we are also working with bigger entities, for example, like government in Indonesia, or some NGOs that can help to push kind of like the distribution of our app to the user who needs.
Yeah. Tell me, it's interesting to hear that you've also started working with the clinics overseas. So is that to support the Indonesian women that are in South Korea or in Malaysia, but they want to kind of stay connected with the Indonesian medical system?
It's actually the other way around. So mainly it's for Indonesian who are in Indonesia. We always want to support Indonesia and Indonesia healthcare. But it's just very unfortunate that even in terms of access for that in Indonesia is still very, very limited.
Yeah.
Let's say if the Indonesians are vertically isolated from overseas support, in reality, it's going to be very, 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 very long for Indonesians to get access to professional healthcare. Imagine this, in a country with 280 million of people, 50% Indonesians, there's only around 5,000 OBGYN.
Wow.
Yeah. Ah. Even like every Indonesian still goes to only Indonesia, we might have to wait maybe 2 to 3 years just to get an appointment.
So is that because medical school is not very popular in Indonesia? Because you would think this was a massive opportunity for students to start OBGYN.
Yes. Okay. So a lot of medical school in Indonesia, yes. But in terms of probably even like further access and everything else might be a little bit complicated for them to pursue. And I think also it's based on, for example, like demand, based on popularity. It might also be kind of like things that prevent them or like hinder them to actually pursue that. For example, to compare OBGYN, which is already like terrible, there's only 700 andrologists in Indonesia.
Oh my God. Okay. I hadn't realized it was that bad. Wow.
Yes.
So when we talk about the challenges that women face dealing with fertility and reproductive care, I think you already mentioned two, right? Firstly, the public opinion, basically, that fertility is a female problem. And secondly, it's that once you actually have fertility problems, to also get access to the right care. Are there any other challenges that women have to deal with?
Well, majority of the time is those two. But obviously, I think on the personal level, they always have added challenges, I think, for like each and every person.
Yeah, just maybe talking about a challenge, because obviously, when we talk about fertility treatment, we talk about egg freezing. We also talk about IVF. It's also very expensive. Is insurance widely popular in Indonesia? Is this something you can get insurance for? Do people have insurance? How does that work?
There's a study that says in Indonesia, for every one person, they have, I think, 0.8 insurance. So they're not like fully covered. There's a lot of opportunities in that area. But the next problem is also says that for many of fertility issues, it's not covered by insurance. So gynae issues such as maybe if they need some surgery that's related to ovaries, or maybe their surgery that's like tumor and stuff, yeah, it can be covered by insurance. But when it comes to fertility issue, very specific, it's not really covered. It's always out of pocket.
Yeah. What are you seeing, let's say, from the support from the ecosystem? Is the government encouraging what you're doing? Obviously, the clinics like to work with you, but the insurers, are they welcoming femtech companies like yourself?
They are exploring. It's not something that they already understand. So we do have a lot of conversations about how do we support or how do we promote women through their fertility and reproductive health. But I think at this point, a lot of time, it is being supported through longevity. And maybe the most extent to it is like through their like vitalities. For example, how do women take care of their health, you know, reproductive health-wise early so that they can be healthy in like every other aspect of their health, and how insurance are actually rewarding them on that. But it's not something that they can cover in terms of the treatment. And I think that's like something that maybe even I myself and like a few other people trying to figure out how do we support that.
How is the femtech and women's health startup ecosystem developing in Indonesia? Are you seeing more companies coming?
Not really.
No.
Unfortunately, it's not really.
Yes,
this is very exciting. There's a lot of women who's already looking into or getting more excited about their fertility and reproductive health. And they say, oh, we need to do something. Unfortunately, I think the ecosystem is not yet supporting that. So we still have to kind of like figure out on which other way that we can support not only our vision, but our business as a whole. So we do see, I would say, old players, those who already experienced, expanding into other aspects of what we call to still fall under femtech. So for example, in terms of pregnancy, maybe sexual health, maybe period health and stuff. But that is, I would say, like growing. So if we look at like in the Indonesian market, it seems as if it's still, how to say, like, you know, very early if we want to compare it even like a market like Singapore or maybe like Hong Kong. But it's a huge market. So
yes,
I'm positive that there's going to be a lot more other player. And eventually, the more people realize, then a lot more people also investing into helping the company or even the ecosystem.
Yeah, because I really feel that, you know, globally, women's health is getting much more attention, more companies coming into the region. And I think the work that the FemTech Association does and just continuously highlighting the amazing companies that are there, it's all helping. But yeah, it's, as you said, Indonesia is such an amazing market. Very excited to see what you do there. I just want to talk about AI a little bit, because obviously AI is a massive buzzword. And it's kind of, you have the companies with no tech and no AI and the ones that have AI. How do you feel AI is helping the women in Indonesia with your platform?
even like for a company like us, we do have AI, but we also acknowledge that within this care, we still need something that's very human touch, still very, very close. So in that case, we see how AI can distribute education faster than it can be done by human. But then at the same time, with the volume that Indonesian market has, it can also help the human part to be a little bit more focused on deciding who they should touch or like help first. It does accelerate not only for us, but for everyone else, like how we want to convey the message as well as go through the visions and our goal. But it really is something that cannot be taken away from the other side. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Cannot replace any of the healthcare providers and doctors. But I think one of the challenges, because I firmly believe that we need AI to eventually close the gender health gap, because otherwise it's going to take forever. And now we have a lot of knowledge available that can help support, particularly for the education of women. But I guess one of the challenges is also the lack of data, right? Are you using machine learning based on your internal client data to understand what the key pain points are? And I guess that would be really interesting as well.
The core of our whole technology is in their data. Right now, for us to be able to provide personalizations, we have up to 620 data points per person. Majority of it actually comes from their genomic information. Hence, we also work with like a genomic company to provide not only a personalized solutions that happen or works for now, but in the future. And we continuously update and develop a lot more other data points that we can put in to provide all of that. But the idea is with this information, we want to help the professional healthcare provider like doctors and every other specialist to understand and see more pattern or see more, you know, research on something to solve and diagnose this whole woman health issue.
Yeah, amazing. Well, I'm very excited to follow and hear what you're doing. I know that you've also participated to help grow your company in a few kind of accelerator programs or incubators. How has that helped you create solutions under OVI?
We learn so much from all of these accelerators or incubators on how other industries are working. It's a very unique perspective because what I feel, let's say we only put ourselves in the idea and the mindset that it is a healthcare company. Typically, healthcare company takes a very long time to grow or to even release a product. Maybe the normal one, they probably have to do trial, all of this like research and like a few other things. And if we put ourselves into that, that's definitely not something that we can do, especially in the startup area. And so from all of these accelerators or even like incubators, we learn how every other industry manage and accelerate basically the revenue making as well as like their business growth. And we adapt and look at which one that we can use and replicate within the industry itself. I think generally that's what I would say help us into not only growing, but kind of like maintaining and sustaining the company.
Wow, that's really interesting insights to see. You basically learn from other industries on what you can do as a step and repeat. How has your funding journey been? How are investors responding to what you're doing?
I would say even with the past 6 months, our strategy has changed maybe twice or three times because the market also changing. I understand and I acknowledge that fundraising is never linear. And especially, you know, in the industry that I chose, which is FemTech, it's interesting on how we have to position ourselves. As much as we put FemTech in our core, we are very flexible when we talk to investors. What it means by flexible is for AI-focused investor, the way we position ourselves is as an AI company. And then on the consumer sector investor, that's like how we position ourselves. And it kind of like changing. But one thing that we still try to tackle is in terms of the bias, right? When we say, oh, we're serving women, it creates an idea in their mind that we're serving a niche market. And then when we talk about how we start with fertility and reproductive health, it kind of put us into even the smaller group.
Yeah.
Although when we talk about the market, it's huge. We're talking about like multi-billion, not even like million, right? Like multi-billion. And I think that's the idea that we are looking at, like experiencing when it comes to fundraising. But at this moment, we're also fundraising a total of 1 million only.
Yeah.
We have a really good feedback and we have a really good backers that actually believe in not only us as a company, but also believe in Marker. And I think that kind of validations that we also have and need, you know, maybe at this point, we're trying to change something that is very, very new. And I think in Southeast Asia, there's not many players when it comes to health. And everybody definitely want to see it. One, they're leading the market for them to be able, oh, yeah, we understand this is a big market, right?
Yeah.
And I think with the current situations that we have, we're like past halfway the mark that we want to have. We only need like kind of like a little bit more. And now we just believe that whoever that believe in it and want to, it sounds bad, but it's reality, like make money together in this market.
Yeah.
We'll definitely jump in. Yeah.
Totally. I think one of the big takeaways from our conference was that it is really about firstly collaboration and partnership, but also really about the money, because that is what is going to be the game changer in all of this. A lot of education needs to happen. When you talk about these investors, do you feel that there is an interest from Indonesian investors or predominantly from overseas investors to support you, or both?
Our experience, we deal with more overseas investors.
Because I can imagine if you're from Indonesia and you have a family office, you would be a company to back, right? But that seems not to necessarily be the case yet.
Yeah. Yeah, I think because maybe some companies still think that it's related to something that we don't really talk about, right? Like who talks about fertility, infertility or even more. So I think that's the association that we feel or over Indonesian investor. I mean, just my experience talking to overseas investors, it's easier in a way that I can just talk about numbers. For example, based on just the demand alone, I'm not even talking about additional trend and stuff. The IVF market in Indonesia is supposed to be 10 times of what it is right now. But they know, even for a government-owned hospitals, the fertility clinic is the one who's like paying for the, like the whole general clinic. So I'm like, you know, that's so easy.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. Okay, that's very interesting. Where do you see OV in 5 years' time? What's kind of your dream for the company?
We are looking to support 5 million women in Indonesia. We start very small, 5 million is small. Yeah, but
yes, you did. We're 2 million a month in your previous startup. So I have big plans for you.
We're looking into helping like 5 million women to go through treatment. So that means like it's even more women like to manage their fertility and reproductive health. And we want to be the biggest player in Indonesia within the female health sector. So that means reaching and including all the brick and mortar solutions as well as the digital solutions specifically for women.
Wow, amazing. I'm so excited for you. As a serial entrepreneur, two more questions, but does life become any easier in your second or third startup?
I would say it's the same. So I'm the high founder who still thinks that, I'm not saying work-life balance, but there's still a need to balance that I need to do to just keep myself healthy so I can run for a long time. So that's just my goal. But what I feel like, because on every business that I have a bigger goal, I have a bigger achievement that I wanted to do, I have more things that I want to do. So as much as I, as a person, grow, I feel like the boundaries that we try to put feels as if it's the same.
Yeah. I recognize it. What are you most excited about in women's health?
A lot more collaborations, not only in one sector, but a more in the general sector of like a woman's health. That's what I'm very excited about. And I think a lot of it's going to be happening more and more with the number of fintech companies that's currently existing. And also with the number of players, not only in very specific country like Indonesia, but how we can actually collaborate with players in other countries like Singapore or Hong Kong. So that's exciting.
Nice. How can listeners support or get involved with OV's mission?
So can follow us on our LinkedIn. It's called OV Health. Our app is now also available in Southeast Asia and UK and US market. So if you want to try out, you can try our beta versions. Unfortunately, for now, it's a beta version for like the people outside of Indonesia. But once we rolled out, you get to experience a whole lot more and how we're actually bringing and closing the gap between you as a woman and the clinic.
Wow, amazing. Well, if you want to understand more about OB Health, the website and all the social handles will be in the show notes. And if you enjoyed this episode and want to make sure that these incredible founders like Saskia get more visibility globally, please like and share our podcast. Saskia, thank you so much for being here today. I really enjoyed our conversation. It was really amazing. And I really enjoyed having you here.
Thank you for having me.